Thanks, and welcome to our seminar. This seminar is called Write Your Book in a Flash, and I'm Dan Janelle, your fearless PR leader, and I am here to help you write your book faster than you can ever possibly imagine, and this seminar will help you invariably through that. We're going to talk about some stories, some case histories, some ideas, some tactics, and most importantly, exercises that you can use. And I know that just about everyone on the line is a type A personality or have ADHD or you're just like itching to get ahead. So if you have your handouts ready, feel free to move ahead at any point. Feel free to start answering the questions. Feel free to start using the assignments. That's what it's all about because it's all about you. I'm here to give you inspiration and ideas and be your book coach to help you along the process. So the handouts should be self-explanatory as we go through the seminar today. And if you have trouble with them, then I'm happy to help you with those handouts during the complimentary 20-minute call that we will have. This is the What's Stopping You, What's Blocking You coaching call that you are all entitled to attend individually on your own schedule. And I will explain how that works toward the end of the program. But as part of the seminar, I am happy to give you 20 minutes of my time to help you figure out what's blocking you from writing your book in a flash. And if there's a good fit there, then maybe we can work together as me being a book coach for you, or me helping you write the book as a co-author or as a ghostwriter or as a mentor, or any other words that you think would help you get through the process. So that's really cool. So I'm glad to see that everyone on this call is either a client of mine, a friend of mine, or I've had some face-to-face relationship, with the exception of one or two people, which I think is really, really sweet. So thank you much. So I've learned that no one knows everything about their vendors. We think as vendors, and you can take this as a marketing lesson for yourself as well, we think that all of our clients know everything about us, but they really, really don't. Why is that? Because they're focused on themselves, not on you. And there are dozens of vendors that they work with as well. So there's no reason in the world that you would logically think that you know every possible aspect of all the services that all of your vendors provide, and your clients think the same about you. So in line with that, even though we sort of know each other and you sort of know what I do, I'd sort of like to tell you a little bit more about me, and then we'll dive deeper into the whole idea of the book, which frankly will have inspirational stories and advisory stories that will help you get along. So believe me, this is not bragging. This is a journey, and I hope that you experience this journey and pick up some points and tips that will help you in your journey as well. You know me as the PR guy. That's true. I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I'm not giving that up. I am branching, spreading my wings, so to speak, and offering more of my services as a book coach and as a ghostwriter, but I'm by no means giving up my PR leads business, where we help experts get publicity through a variety of methods, through press releases, through media databases, and of course our signature PR leads program, which is the ultimate matchmaking program between reporters and experts like you. So that still goes on. So this is a message about branding, because the minute you announce a new program, people think that you've thrown away your other program. No, not true. We're still doing publicity, and we're expanding and doing more things because, hey, I'm a multidimensional person, as are many of you, and we like to do lots of different things because we get bored doing the same old thing time and time again, and we'd like to stretch and do other things, and that's really, really cool. So I discovered one thing about me, and that's my superpowers. That seems to be a great word that kids are using today. You know, what is your superpower? Well, I learned that my superpower is writing fast. In fact, the book that I'm writing now, which is called Write Your Book in a Flash, at least that's the working title of the book, I am up to 39,975 words. I stopped just short of 40,000 words yesterday, so I could crack the 40,000 word mark with you on the line today, so sort of a milestone. And I've done that in just 8 weeks. Which a lot of you say that is a superhuman time, and I would say yes, that's true. And then you realize that I had a week of vacation and a week where I was just sort of feeling down in the dumps and didn't write anything, and it's even more words per day than you would imagine. Yes, it can be done. I realize that my superpower is writing words fast. I get ideas in my head, and they come out through my fingers, and they get on the computer, and surprisingly, that should be no surprise to me. But why is that? Well, I was a newspaper reporter, And I wrote three stories a day, every day for 4 years. And these were stories from scratch, where we'd go to city hall meetings or school board meetings, or we get a feature idea and we'd write feature stories for the weekends. And every day for 4 years, I wrote three stories. Now, they weren't terribly long stories, about 1,000 words, 2,000 words, which frankly, compared to a blog post, is pretty long. And they involved researching and calling people and attending meetings and getting comments and getting the other side of the story. Yes, we used to get the other side of the story back in the day when reporters were reporters and not analysts. But that's another story for another time. So because of that, I write fast. It is just in my nature to write fast. And of course, how did I get prepared for that? Well, I went to Northwestern University. I went to their journalism school. And Northwestern is one of those real, real tough academic schools. I'm not saying that to brag, but it is. And they demand a lot out of their students. So they had the trimester system. You might be familiar with your school. It had a semester system. You were there for a whole long time, and you can goof off for the first couple of weeks because it didn't matter, because you have your midterm until like 8 or 10 weeks into the course. So Northwestern, totally different. Trimester system. That meant that we had 10 weeks. We had four classes in 10 weeks, and each class had at least three papers or midterms and finals, or, you know, things you really had to bone up for. So in other words, we had to do 12 major projects in 10 weeks. There is no time for goofing off. You know, most of my Friday nights were spent in the library doing research. Wasn't that fun? Actually, we hung around the library lounge at 9 o'clock, and that was fun. But then we were back to three more hours of grinding it out and doing research and finding things and writing things and editing things. It was a hell of an experience, but you do that for 4 years, and that prepares you to write three stories a day, every day for daily newspapers, and that prepares you to write 40,000 words in a book in 8 weeks or less. So I know how to get organized, and my real superpower is bringing order out of chaos. I happened to pick up a book on emotional intelligence at the airport the other day when I was coming back from a speaking engagement, and I thumbed through the book and found that my emotional intelligence skill is called strategic. Seeing different avenues of exploration, thinking outside of the box. This is all part of the strategic thinker. And the interesting thing about the strategic thinking is that it cannot be taught. That's what it said in the book. Strategic thinking cannot be taught. You either have it or you don't have it. I'm sorry. But that's the gift that I bring to my clients. And I'll tell you some stories about that as we get through this. In fact, let me do now. There's a story. I'll call it Nancy's story because that's her name. And Nancy is a client of mine, and she had a great idea for a book. In fact, she didn't have a great idea for one book. She had a great idea for three books and a motion picture screenplay because she thought that her story had that much legs. And I took her on as a client, but I realized really early on that she was all over the place. And you might be all over the place as well. That's why I'm telling you the story, because if you see yourself in Nancy's story, then that's part of the benefit of telling the story. So here's the story. I realized that she was going to be all over the place, and I can't work with people who are all over the place because they have to get focused. You know, there are people who can get their horses in a row and people who are going to let the horses run wild. And if it's too wild, then I just can't work. No one can work with those people. But if they can marshal their ideas, then I can work with them and I can bring them under control and help them along the way. So I gave Nancy a very, very simple assignment. I said, in the next 24 hours, I want you to send me three sentences about what your book is about. Now, three sentences, that's not hard. And 4 hours later, she did. And they were very coherent sentences, and they made a lot of sense. And I realized that I could work with her, and I told her that. And she told me this was the hardest assignment she's ever had. You know, it's tough to write a book if you have thousands and thousands of ideas and you can't get them all together. You need someone on the outside to come in and say, hey, this is a good idea, this is a bad idea, this idea is too far afield, this idea is for book two, this idea is too detailed in the weeds, it doesn't help people, whatever. So we worked through that, and eventually we came up with a really, really good outline for her book that she could sit down and write. So I realized then and there that I had a consulting service that would actually help people and provide real value to people. And that's why I'm doing this seminar, and that's why I'm writing this book called Write Your Book in a Flash. So I've written 9 books. This is going to be my 10th book. 3 of them were self-published. 6 of them were published by Wiley. They've been translated to several languages. And just give you a little bit about my journey with those books have led to incredible, incredible opportunities. And when you write your book, they will lead to incredible opportunities as well. For example, the first book I wrote for Wiley was called The Online Marketing Handbook, and it was literally the first book about marketing on the internet. And I wrote it back in 1993. That's when Al Gore and I were like the only people on the internet. Insert laugh line here. Thank you very much. And that book has been translated to several languages. It led to speaking engagements from everywhere from Beijing to Budapest to Rio de Janeiro to all over Canada, the United States, and Mexico. It also led to speaking engagements. Actually, I taught the first internet marketing class at Berkeley in their extension division, and I also taught a one-day seminar on internet branding at Stanford. And so it just opened up a lot of doors. So whenever you write your book, it's going to lead to new business in ways that you never could have imagined before. So that's really cool. So do you have it in you? Can you write a book? And I'm here to tell you, yes, you can. And let's advance to the next slide so you can see the different kinds of books. Because whenever people think about books, they think about, you know, these really thick, big books that are full of thought leadership and lots of stories and lots of research. And that's great. That is the ultimate thought leadership book. And if you look on your pyramid, that's way at the bottom. That's a book, level five book is the thought leadership. We'll get to that in a second. I just want to show you that there are many, many different kinds of books, and many different kinds of books all have authority that can help you, and that you should figure out which option is best available to you, because these are all credible books. They're just different formats, different styles, and they require different levels of commitment, different levels of time, and different levels of money to publish those books, but they're all good. You'll notice that there's one book at the outset here that I will say you should not write, and that is the anthology book. That's where someone comes along and says, hey, we'll put you in a book with Brian Tracy. You'll become an international best-selling author. You just write a chapter, or we'll interview you, and we'll write a chapter for you. Easy peasy. Give us a couple $1,000. We'll give you a couple hundred copies of the book. I don't think that book is a great door opener, frankly, and I know some people will disagree with me, but, you know, that's what a debate is all about. I think anthologies do not help true thought leaders who are really trying to say that they are standing out in the field, that they are the lone wolf, that they are the thought leader, that they are the exceptional idea person. If you're one chapter in 20 chapters, I just don't think that does that for you. On the other hand, you could write a book, let's go back to our chart here, and they're layered in order of easy and complex, easy to complex, and easy to write to difficult to write, and such like that. Now, at the very top of the pyramid, we have a book based on tweets. How cool is that? Think about it. You can take 120 of your tweets, put them in a book, or be interviewed by someone who will grab 120 ideas from your speeches or your thoughts or your interview and turn them into a book. And you might say to yourself, that's really a book? Will people really enjoy that? Is there really enough thought leadership in there? Well, I was a little doubtful as well, but my friend Mitch came up with this idea of doing these aha books. He calls them an aha book. And he basically takes 120 tweets, turns them into a nice book, either softcover or hardcover, and he sent me a couple of copies. And I have to tell you, they are really good. I read a book on, here it is, it's called Reader Expectation Approach to the English Language by George Gopin. What a hell of a title, right? Gopin's Reader Expectation Approach to the English Language. And I guess he's an English teacher somewhere in a college, and he had 120 tweets in here, and I started reading it one day, and I started turning down pages and making notes and saying, hey, this is a great idea. And so I learned things, and I thought, you know, Mitch really has a good idea here. This stuff could really be turned into a book that people will find valuable. Because, frankly, people don't want to read thick books these days. You know, I remember when my first book came out, The Online Marketing Handbook, it had close to like 350 to 400 pages. And I did, and I spoke at a seminar for the National Speakers Association in Northern California. It was a whole day of, you know, marketing and speaking and whatever, and I did a breakout session. And during lunch, this woman sat down next to me and said, you know, I attended your seminar, and it was very, very insightful. I said, thank you very much. And I saw you have a book. It looks very thorough and comprehensive. And I said, well, thank you very much. And I just have one question for you. And I said, what is that? I'll be happy to help you. And she said, do I have to read all of it? Well, that was 1993. And I got to tell you, people's attention span has only gotten worse since 1993. So I think Mr. Gopin and Mr. Mitchell have a very interesting idea here when they can take 120 tweets of your best thoughts, best ideas, and put them into a book, and you can give this book to your clients and say, hey, this is my big business card. Here's my key thinking. If you think it's a good idea, if you think this works better for me, then let's work together. I think that's great. I'm looking at another book by Mitch. It's called A Model of Servant Leadership, Live, Lead, and Love, 140 Actionable Ideas to Build Your Heart for Servant Leadership by a guy named Mark Dieterding. So he has a great title there, funny last name, Dieterding, but real good title here. And it is hardcover, and it's no more than half an inch thick, which means that if you put this on your bookshelf, you can see the name of the person and the title of the book and the publishing company. So I would strongly advise you, as you take your notes, to have at least 120 pages in your book, so there's enough volume in the book, so there's enough room on the spine to print your name. If you if your book is less than that, it's very, very hard to put the book that information on your spine. I learned that the hard way when I wrote my book, Reporters Are Looking for You. It was about 96 pages, which was just a little bit too short to put my name on the cover, or rather on the spine, and that was a big, big mistake by me. Okay, so that's it for the tweet book. I think they're very clever. If you don't have a lot of time, and if you do have a lot of good ideas, or you can be interviewed and we can pull out ideas, that's a book that can be written very, very quickly for you, and then you have a big business card to give to your clients. By the way, let's talk about that concept. Let's take a little detour here. The idea of the big business card. Frankly, why are you writing a book? I think you're writing a book, if you're on this call, because you want to get more clients. So you can write a big thought leadership book like the Level 5 Thought Leadership book, and I can help you with that. And they're certainly great books, and they're certainly well worth doing. Or, and you can have a lot of credibility with your clients and your prospects. Or you can start a tweet book like this and have all credibility as well. And it might ever get read more because it is so easy to get through. So there are pros and cons to all these different kinds of books. And there are many, many pros to each of these and very few cons. So that's the idea here. But the idea for the book is really like, how can I get new clients? How can I build that know, like, and trust factor with these prospects who don't know me from anyone else, who are wondering, why should I work with you when I just got pitched by 5 other people? What makes you stand out? Well, the fact that you have a book makes you stand out, because we think that people who have books are very smart and credible people. In fact, I was speaking at a conference a couple of years ago, for a conference of computer dealers and computer resellers, and I did a couple of breakout sessions on how to get publicity and marketing. And the president of the company made an announcement over the loudspeaker, and he said, after the breakout sessions and after lunch, I invite you to come down to the convention hall where you can see our exhibitors, display their printers and their ribbons and their products and their such like that. And also, I'll be signing copies of my new book at our pavilion. And I thought, new book, wow. And I tell you, the line for people to get a copy of his free book and have him autograph the book was out the door. All the attendees wanted to get a copy of the president of this company's biography and his rules for success. And he was a star because he had written a book, or he had ghostwritten a book, or a book was written for him. Whatever. He's a pretty busy guy. I assume he had a ghostwriter. In fact, when I heard a speech at my local NSA Minnesota chapter recently, the speaker who had written a wonderful book, I mean, one of these real thought leadership books, real thick, looks like a real book, hardcover, lots of pages, lots of words, lots of ideas, good stuff. She said, I wrote this book and I really sweated it out and I'm really glad I wrote it. But then people in NSA told me, oh, don't you know? You're supposed to hire a ghostwriter. No one writes their own books anymore. And frankly, that floored me. It floored her. It floored everyone else in the room, too. But it just goes to show that, you know, you have better things to do with your time than to sit down and write a book. You're off doing big deals. You're off consulting with your clients. Your time is worth a lot of money. You can hire someone to write your book for you, put your name on the book. They're happy to not have their name on the book, and everyone goes their merry way. They get paid. You get a book. You get your credibility. It's your ideas. So it's your book. That's perfectly fine. That's cool. No problem. Okay. So we talked about the tweet book. Let's go to the level two book. The level two book are composed of blogs and articles. So instead of the little tweets, you have your 200 to 400 to 600 word blog posts or articles that you've already written. So again, this is an easy book for you to write because you can do some light editing because there might be some, you know, as Valentine's Day approaches, you might be thinking about ways to blah, blah, blah. Well, in an evergreen book, you don't want to mention Valentine's Day. You may not want to mention former clients. You might not want to mention certain companies that you worked with before for any number of reasons. So it does require some light editing to remove those kinds of things that might cause you some embarrassment or legal hassles later on. So again, this is an easy kind of book to write because it's really taking your initial ideas. Maybe you have a preface in front of each chapter to introduce the ideas, or you break the book into several sections and have overview chapters to introduce those ideas. So you're adding a little bit more information. But again, a very, very easy book to write, a very easy book to basically hire an editor and say, hey, here's my stuff, organize it for me so it makes sense. In fact, Seth Godin, who I'll refer to throughout the seminar, he writes prolific, you know, best marketer in the world, you know, best thought leader in marketing there could ever possibly be. Every day he sends me an email and thousands of other people about his latest thought leadership. And it could be two or three paragraphs, could be 100 words, 200 words, very, very short, easy to read. And because of that, I read it every day. So as I said before, there's a value in being short. People will find the time to read it, where if you're long, they say, oh, I'll get around to reading it later. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Well, we all want to be read. So one of Seth's readers at one point actually went up to him and said, hey, I know you have thousands and thousands of blog posts and tweets that or emails that you sent out every day. I would like permission to just take the ones that I think are really, really cool and put them into a book. And I'll do this for free for you because I love you and you've helped me so much. And, you know, if you like it, we can publish it. And if not, you know, it's a nice exercise for me to just reread your material and get re-inspired by them. And he said, fine, and bingo. So this is an idea that has been done and can be done. And again, a lot of credibility because it's your blog posts, your articles. So these are your ideas, your thoughts, and presenting you as someone who we know, like, and trust because it's your information. That's really cool stuff. Here's another book you shouldn't write. You should not write books that include quotes from other people. And I've seen people write 101 great sales quotes, and they'll go on Google or something and look for sales quotes, and they'll put them into a book and put their name on it and say, I wrote a book. Like, no, you didn't write a book. I'm sorry. That's just sloppy and lazy. And if you think you're getting credibility that way, you are 100% wrong. I am sorry. Okay. Level three. This is a remix book. This is where you're taking content from speeches and articles. And it's pretty much like the level two book, but again, it goes up a little bit because you're taking your speeches. And you do a speech, you do a teleseminar, you do a webinar, you do a podcast. I'll put them all in the same line. There are a lot of great ideas there. And if you hire an editor, they can come in and take those ideas and turn them into articles and flesh out ideas and get rid of your bad grammar that comes through when we're talking on the fly. Because frankly, if you look at a transcript of a spoken webinar like this, and you'd be embarrassed by what the transcript looks like. It really needs to be turned into proper English because we start sentences, we stop sentences prematurely, we assume things in evidence that weren't in evidence because we forgot to preface the idea because we're kind of nervous and all that. So you really want to work with an editor, but this is, again, it's an easy book to write because you've basically spoken your book. And isn't that great? So for everyone on the line who says, well, I like to speak, but I really don't like to write. I hate writing and words don't come naturally. And I'm afraid of grammar and whatever. Well, yeah, you can speak your book. And there are people out there who can transcribe your book. And these are not editors. These are really just people who are going to take it from one format into another. And then you hire an editor who will go through it and really, you know, put pedal to the metal and make sure that it meets the business context and really is standout material and really polish up your grammar and your word choice and such like that. Okay. Level four books. This is really the true big business card in my thought. It's a thin book. I'm looking at half a dozen of them. Excuse me, I'm going to expand my reach, as they say at my restaurants. I just reached across and picked up four books that I consider big business card books, and they all follow a slightly different format, so I'll share that with you. One is called The One-Page Sales Coach. It's by Dean Menuto. He was the Vistage Speaker of the Year, and I attended a seminar with him. In fact, I spoke at that seminar later in the day, and he gave out copies of his book, which include all of his wonderful ideas. It's about 126 pages here, and there are like blank pages at the end, so you can take notes, and I think that also helps to flesh out the book. So as you're taking notes here, think of like, gee, I only have 116 pages. What can I do to add four more pages? What other ideas do I have? I don't have any more ideas. I'm really, really shot. Put in blank pages with lines across, and people can write their own notes there. So it fills out the book. It looks like it's really good. Okay, so I read through this book. It was a wonderful book. This book sounded like it was his speech, his three-hour seminar, word for word. And it included his handouts, it included exercises to do, it includes personal action summaries at the end of each chapter. And it's really good because it really presents him in a wonderful light. It's his best material. It's the material that we just heard in his seminar. So if you attended the seminar, it's a nice refresher. And, of course, some people like to learn better by reading. Some people like to learn better by listening. Some people like to learn better by doing. So this affects a number of those modalities. So I think this is an excellent idea for a big business card because it really positions them beautifully. The next book I'm looking at is called Handling Irate Customers in Difficult Situations. It's by a client of mine, John Scholl, and it really is a training manual for customer service people and their exercises and examples in here and how-to material and why you should do things and whatever. And again, this is a book that he sells. It's you could call it a big business card book, or you could just say, I have training material and I want to sell it to people, and that's fine, or I want to give it away as a way of getting more clients, and that's great. Either way, it works. But you can sell any of these books. When I say big business card as a lead gen, that's true. But you can sell any of these books, too. I'm remiss in not making that point earlier. So these books are definitely for sale. These are books you can sell at the back of the room when you're doing your seminars. You can sell them on your website and such like that. So I'm not devaluing them at all. In fact, you should also put a price on the back of your book. Put that in your notes. You might want to write that down. Thank you. Because when you put a price on a book, then people think it has intrinsic value. So it's $19.95 or $24.95. They're going to think they got a $20 book for free. They're going to be eternally grateful. If they think they got a marketing piece for free, they're not going to be eternally grateful at all. So you can put your training seminars here. The next book I'm holding is a book called Push, A Guide to Living An All-Out Life, The Story of Orange Theory Fitness by Ellen Latham's. I don't know if you've heard about Orange Theory Fitness. It's my favorite gym. It's the only gym I go to where I actually get motivated, and I've been going there for more than a year now, so it really must work, and I've lost more than 20 pounds, so I'm really, really happy with them. Anyway, so she wrote this book as a legacy book and a how-to book and probably a book that will help her get more clients like me to become monthly members and also to sell franchises because that's their business model. So it's basically her story of how she started as a trainer, her ups and downs, things that went right, things that went wrong, how she finally hit upon this wonderful idea to create this kind of gym that sets herself apart from all the other gyms. And the word push happens to be one of the key words in our exercise program, because there's a base level of running, and then you push yourself, and there's all out, which is like, you know, pedal to the metal, you're going all out. So the title of her book is called Push, A Guide to Living an All-Out Life. See how she's working her branding into that, into the title and the subtitle, which I thought was brilliant. And it was a nice, fun book to read, and we got to learn about the science behind the exercise. And again, this is about 144 pages, so there's plenty of room here. It's an easy read. And it's a nice thing to do to build your brand, to build your personal brand, to get the next job, to sell your services, your franchises, and such like that. So those are ideas of big business cards. Other ideas that you may think of, are your life story with lessons that you've learned along the way. That's usually a very typical outline for a book, and we'll talk about outlining in book chapters in just a few minutes. So this is the light version of thought of level five book, which I call the thought leadership book. And those are the true thought leadership books that you think of when you're thinking of a book, you know, a Wiley book, a Prentice Hall book, a Simon and Schuster book. And you've read those kinds of books, Good to Great, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I have numerous clients who've written books that you've never heard of that use the same basic format. And we'll talk about that format in just a second. But they're basically, these books are well-researched. They take more time to write. They're obviously more expensive to produce because there are more pages, more words, more examples, deeper levels of thought, deeper and longer case studies. So those are the four, or the five rather, basic kinds of books that you can write for thought leadership. All of them will help you. It's just a question of how much time, energy, and money you want to devote to the process. So again, I want to overcome your possible fear and procrastination, saying, oh my God, I have to write 60,000 words. I have to fill 250 pages. No, you can do this with as simple as tweets that you create now. You can do it with material that you've already written in terms of your blogs and your articles. You can do it with material that you're currently producing with your podcasts, your webcasts, your speeches, and such like that, and then turn it into a book. One other point I want to make about the big business card, especially with Dean's book, it's limited. In fact, one of the people who asked the question for this seminar, we will get to those questions at the end of the seminar, is like, when do I know when to stop? That's a great question because my background is high-tech PR, and there are a lot of products that never launched because the developers kept on saying, oh, let's add another feature. Oh, let's add one more feature. Oh, let's add one more feature. Well, when it comes to a book, people don't want to read 6,000 pages. Tim Ferriss wrote a new book called, The Tools of the Titans, and that's basically a level three book. It's a remix book from all those podcasts. He took, he's taken the best, juiciest tips from many of those people and put like a 700-page book. Well, it's hard to read a 700-page book. Fortunately, it's in nice bite-sized chunks. So don't feel you have to write a 700-page book or a 400-page book. There are other options for you that will give you many, many credible opportunities. So put in the material that helps you the most. As I'm writing my book, I could go on for a lot longer. And I realize, my purpose in writing my book is to get coaching clients, book coaching clients and ghostwriting assignments and co-author assignments. So I am limiting my stories to the ones that position me as a person who's overcome difficulties and has learned from those difficulties, or a person who has worked with people in all sorts of situations and helped them overcome all sorts of situations. So the people who read this book will say, hey, I could write this book, but I really don't have time. I should hire Dan to write this book. So anything that supports that idea stays in the book. Anything that's really good general information for people to know stays in the book, because if I present this information, it shows me as someone they can know, like, and trust. So that helps build my credibility as well. But anything that's way, way off base, like should you self-publish versus go to a traditional publisher, or how to write a book proposal, or how to negotiate your fee with wholesalers and distributors, that's not in the book, because that doesn't position me as an expert. I don't want to work with those issues. There are other people who can do it much better than I. It takes away from my focus. So how do you know when you're done with your book? When you have given people information that they will say, the person who wrote this book is a wonderful person. I wish I could work with them. I wonder how I can work with them. And I wonder what the next step is. That's when you know you're done. Okay. And if you need more information than that, then I'm certainly happy to help you during our one-on-one call as well. Okay. So let's go on to the next slide. There are 9 steps to writing a book. I can micromanage and say there are 999 steps to writing a book. But I think there are 9 essential steps that I found that helped me get focused toward writing a book. Because if we micromanage this, you'll never get started. So 9 steps are pretty easy. Number 1, and we're going to do this during our seminar today, or you'll have the opportunity to do this later, but I'll share the tools with you so you can do these exercises. Number one, write a 100-word executive summary. That's actually wrong. It should be about a 500-word executive summary. I don't want to limit you to 100 words. I put this on the slide. It's my mistake. I looked at how many words were in my executive summary, and it was closer to 350 to 500. So I realized, like, it's impossible to get someone on the first try to write about their book to do a 100-word executive summary. We'll talk about how to pare that down later, because you will need a shorter executive summary for the back cover of your book and also for the book description on Amazon. So this is the first step in creating that much, much shorter executive summary that you'll need for those other purposes. So number one, when you write your executive summary, we'll go into some more detail in a few minutes. Okay. Number two, you create your foolproof positioning statement. That's like your elevator pitch, but I created it, like I call it my foolproof positioning statement, and you'll see why it's different and better than anything else you've ever seen before. Number three, you'll brainstorm on a working title. I say a working title because if you try to think of the perfect title now, you'll never get started. You just won't. The first title for my book was called How to Outline Your Book. And I realized, like, who cares about outlining your book? What they really want done is the benefit of the outline, which is how to write your book in a flash. And frankly, I'm not too sure that that's the best title for this book either, but it rolls off my tongue. I can get it out there. People get an idea of what it is, and they can say, what's that about? Tell me more. And that's all I want them to do at this point. And, you know, the title of the book may very well be, you know, get off your ass and write your damn book already. but that may not be good for thought leadership. So we'll take it one step at a time. Step number four, overcoming limiting beliefs. And then, because we all have those limiting beliefs, I strongly, strongly suggest you get this book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. I have it here on my desk. I'm reading it. I'm rereading it. I'm turning down pages. I'm underlining it. It is great. He basically says that we're all up against this invisible force called resistance. You might call it procrastination. He calls it resistance. And resistance wins. Resistance puts all these factors in front of you. Oh, I think I'm hungry. I think I'll write my book after I have an apple. Oh, I think I'll go for a little walk. My head will be clear. Then I'll write my book. Oh, I'm a little tired today. I think resistance wins. This is a wonderful book for overcoming that resistance. And there were other ideas as well that we hopefully will get to during this exercise in the next couple of slides. Okay. Next idea is to write 10 chapter titles. This is part of my secret sauce. This is part of the real true value that I'm bringing to you in this seminar today and in my book. Every book can be made much more easy to write if you use this formula. Every book has 10 chapters. Big mistake here that I have to fix. 10 chapter titles. That's fine. Okay, never mind. Okay, 10 chapters. The first chapter is your overview, what the book is about, why you're the best person to write it, what they're going to learn, what the benefit is, and a roadmap of the other chapters in the book. Chapter 10 is also unique. It says, here's what you learned, here's what you should do next, here are next steps to take, all that good stuff. But chapters 2 through 8 are the exact same. They all follow the same format. You know, I am proving a point. I want you to do something. Here's why you should do it, or here's the how to do it, or here's my way of thinking. Here's why you should think this way as well. Here are case studies and histories and whatever that support this idea. So chapters 2 through 9 are really the same basic idea. So you can outline your chapters for your book very, very quickly. And of course, there's space on your handouts to do that. Now, you think you might be able to say, I can write this book off the top of my head. In some cases, you can. I have written books off the top of my head. When I wrote my book, Reporters Are Looking for You, I wrote that book off the top of my head because I'd already created a 90-day instructional series for my new PR Leads clients. Every day, they get another tip on how to do publicity. Each tip is wonderful, and I've gotten a lot of compliments for those tips. But at the same time, people can't memorize and internalize 90 tips in one sitting. So I drip it out to them every day and send them an email every day with another tip. And people say, hey, this is really great. This is useful. It's wonderful. This reinforces what I know. Whatever. It's a new idea. Fantastic. Well, I took those 90 tips and I put them into a book. And there might have been tips on writing and tips about talking to reporters and tips about editing and whatever. So I rearranged each tip into different chapters and sections so it would work well. So again, it's a great big business card book. So if you have a training series, you could easily turn that into a nice book and sell it or give it away. So that was a book I could do off the top of my head. I wrote another book about 10 years ago. It was called Business Speak. It was one of the first books about voice recognition technology in the office, because I thought voice recognition was the next big thing. And I was right, but I was only 10 years too soon. So it wasn't until last year when Alexa and Siri and everything became really, really big in the last couple of years. I was 10 years ahead of the time. So when I sat down to write the book, I had gone to a couple of conferences and I thought I could write the book, but I ran out of material after page 96. I was like dying. I need more material. So I had to call consultants in the voice recognition space and scientists who were doing research in the voice recognition space and companies who were producing products in voice recognition. And I eventually got enough material to write the book. So there's so much material that you have in your head because you're a thought leader, and that may be enough material for the book, or you may want to research and find other people to help give your book, frankly, more credibility, because if you're quoting other people in your book, it has more legs, it has more juice. And granted, you know, you might say, but I'm sharing that authority and they won't think I'm a thought leader anymore. No, you're giving them access to professors and researchers and thought leaders and consultants, whatever. So their branding reflects back on you. So it works out very, very nicely. Then step number 8, write the book. Yes, write the book. And if you're finding trouble, then you get help. There's no shame in getting help. I spoke to Ken Blanchard at the seminar that I spoke at, and he said that he loves working with co-authors. All of his books were written with co-authors. You know, someone as famous as Ken Blanchard, who sold 20 million books. I mean, he says he learns from his co-authors. So isn't that a wonderful way to reposition the entire idea of working with a collaborator, a ghostwriter, or a book coach? You're learning from each other. Okay, so let's get focused here. Let's see, how can we get started here? So let's go to the first step, and to write the 100-word description. This gets focused. It basically answers these 6 questions. What is the book about? Who is the ideal reader? What is the problem you're solving for them? How will they benefit from reading the book? Why is your book better than the other books on the market? And why are you the best person to write this book? If you do answer these 6 simple questions, you will be ahead of so many other people. Because frankly, not a day goes by where I don't get a phone, where I get a phone call. Not a day goes by where I don't get a phone call from someone saying, "Hi, I've written a book," and I'll say, "Great, what's it about?" "Well, it's about 120 pages, and it took me about 2 years to write, and I researched it very thoroughly, and I really love the topic, and I really am passionate about this." And I'm saying to myself, "What's the book about?" And the truth is, they can't explain it in this manner. So if you can answer these questions, you'll be well ahead of everyone else. Plus, it puts you in the right frame of mind because it gives you the perfect idea of who you're writing it for. We call this exercise the customer avatar exercise, and I learned it from my good friend Christian Michelson, who's a coach. And I was attending one of his seminars when he was teaching this, and he said, "Your avatar is your ideal client." Now, we all say everyone can benefit from reading my book. That's true, but you don't have enough money to market the book to everyone. You know, news alert. So who are the best people? Who is the ideal person? Who's the person who's going to see this book, see this title, and say, "Aha, I want to buy this book. I can't live without this book." That's your perfect avatar. So in Christian's view, his perfect customer, listen to the level of detail. His perfect customer is named Judy. She's 47 years old. She's a woman. She's married. She has 2 kids who are in middle school. She drives a Chevy Suburban. She attends 2 coaching sessions in person every year, and she attends pays for coaching calls on teleseminars and stuff. Her husband says, "When are you going to start making some money with this stupid coaching thing?" And everyone laughed. And I looked around the room, and I realized that everyone in the room, except for me and this other guy, were 47 years old. Their name wasn't Judy, but they very well might have been. They all drove those minivans. They all had young kids. They all spent a fortune on coaching services, and they hadn't made a dime. So, like, bingo, he nailed it. So you want to get into that frame of mind. And once you do, you'll have a whole lot easier time selling your book because you'll know exactly who it's for, and they'll know exactly how they can benefit from that. So take your time and fill in those answers. On the next slide, it's the working title. I think it's great to just jot down an idea of what you think your title could be. It doesn't matter. It's going to change a thousand times between now and the publication of your book. You're going to get feedback from people. You're going to post it on Facebook and say, hey, I'm thinking of book titles. Here's A, B, and C. What do you think is best? And you're going to get some feedback from them and say, okay, I thought this was a great idea, and my audience didn't think it was a great idea. They thought this was a better idea. So don't worry about it being perfect. Just worry about just having something. So when you go to your networking meetings and your speaker meetings and whatever, you say, hey, I'm working on a book. What's it called? You can say, oh, it's called Think and Grow Rich for Left-Handed People. Oh, okay, cool. Great. Thank you. Okay. But next, overcoming limiting beliefs. Very, very important. I know a lot of questions I received earlier were about limiting beliefs. And I talked about the War of Art book. Definitely get that book. I think I put a link to it on your handout. So if you're looking at the PDF online, it's a $10 book. It's easy to read. It's wonderful. And basically, he gives you ideas on how to overcome resistance, how to think of yourself as a true professional. And professionals sit down and they write every day. You know, you think about the person who goes to work and he digs ditches every day. He doesn't say, oh, my back hurts, or I think I'll take a walk. I think I'll have an apple first, then I'll dig the ditch. No, he sits down and he digs the ditch. The doctor, he doesn't say, oh, I'm not feeling well today. I don't think I'm going to go to work. I think I'll do it tomorrow. I think I'll watch Oprah first, and I think I get inspiration from reading some Hemingway, and then I'll sit down and write my book. No, he goes to the clinic, and he says, okay, bring in the next patient, and whether I'm feeling 100% or 60%, I'm going to do my best and serve that patient. You need to think of yourself as a professional. And once you do, you realize that there's no other option but to sit down every day and write your 1,000 words, or whatever your word count happens to be. Okay, the next book I'd highly recommend is by Seth Godin. It's called The Dip, and this is a brilliant book. Seth says that everyone starts out with grand expectations. You know, his example is, hey, everyone, I'm a high school student, and I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to go to college, and I'm going to become a doctor. And the grandma says, oh, isn't that wonderful? Here's a gift. And everyone is proud and says, oh, my son, the doctor, isn't this is great. And then he goes to college, and he takes oral organic chemistry, and he realizes that being a doctor is not his future. So he has to decide, and we all have to decide. Are we going to go? Are we going to persevere? Are we going to say, this stuff is harder than I thought, but I have the mental acuity to get through organic chemistry? Or I was like, man, this is so far over me. I don't even know how to play with the Tinker Toys and do all these formulas and stuff. I'm getting out of here. And we all have that. You know, I started playing the piano, and you know, I hit this wall. And it's like, you know, I'm never going to be good at this. It's fun, but I'm never going to be good at this. So I switched to the guitar, and I said, you know, this is fun. I'm never going to be good at this. So I switched to the banjo. I said, this is fun. And then I went back to the piano. I said, hey, I'm a lot better than I thought. And it works. It's a little cross-training with musical instruments. Anyway, you have to decide. Are you going to write this book or you're not going to write the book? And you may say, I really want to have a book. I don't have the wherewithal to write the book. I'm going to get me a coach or a speech or a book coach or a ghostwriter or whatever and get the book done and put my name on it and use this for marketing purpose and use this and make money from selling the book and all that good stuff and build my brand and build my personal brand. It can be done. It just doesn't have to be done by me. Another big problem that I have seen with many people, in fact, people at the highest level suffer from the imposter syndrome. And this is the syndrome where you say, who am I to write this book? Why would people believe me? And in fact, I had one client, this is great. She was a dentist and she said, I want to write this book, but I really don't feel I'm really specialized. So really tell me about yourself. Well, I was born in Harlem and my mother was drug addicted. My father disappeared, but you know, I went to Columbia and I got my degree, and then I went to Harvard Medical School and I got my degree there. And then I went for additional training at Princeton, and I'm saying to myself, what? You don't think you have a story to tell? You know, she was totally blind to the fact that she had overcome so many things, gone to so many prestigious schools, had won so many awards. She thought she was normal, which is great. But there are other people along the way who think that no matter what they do, it isn't good enough. They keep on striving harder and harder and more because they think that they are really phonies and they will be found out one day. And that affects a lot of people. And I'd really suggest you read a book by Amy Cuddy that will help you get through that process, or work with a psychologist or a coach who can help you overcome your limiting beliefs. Other people are held back by the grammar. Don't worry about grammar. You can hire editors to clean up your grammar. Some people say they don't have enough time. Well, you can always make more time, or again, hire someone. But you can get up earlier, you can stay up later. I wrote my online marketing handbook basically from midnight to 3 a.m. every day for several months because I was doing high-tech PR during the day. I was busy. I was working 8 to 10 hours a day doing what made me money. But I found the time at night. I watched less television. I stayed up later. I got up earlier, whatever. Different people have different modalities. Some people like to work late. Some people work earlier, whatever. You carve out the time and eventually it gets done. Tony Robbins has another great exercise for overcoming limiting beliefs as well. And he basically says, think of all the reasons that that belief is false. So you say, well, I don't have time. Well, why is that false? Well, if I don't watch 3 hours of television, I'd have more time. If I don't do this, I'd have more time. If I was more reflective about this and cut out that or did this more efficiently, I'd have more time. So you'd be surprised when you just pile up all the evidence that shows that you are not fat, lazy, and stupid. You will find out that you truly are not fat, lazy, and stupid, and you really can write your book or get help. Okay, we're probably going to go over time here. It's 50 minutes into the hour. I do apologize. There's a lot of great material. I don't want to rush through this, but I just want to put you on notice here now that it's probably going to take a few more minutes than I had thought. So hopefully you'll find this useful and you'll stay with me. And there is no big sales pitch at the end, so don't worry about that. This is real content here. So thank you. Okay, the next is what I call my foolproof positioning statement. I have been using this foolproof positioning statement. It's something I've created more than 30 years ago. It's been copied and modified millions and millions of times where it's almost part of the vernacular now. In fact, I once did a teleseminar where a woman shared her positioning statement, her elevator pitch. She said, it's the most wonderful elevator pitch in the world. It was my elevator pitch. Pretty amazing. I created this when I was doing high-tech PR more than 30 years ago. It spread all over Silicon Valley because I wrote a book called How to Publicize High-Tech Products and Services, and everyone who read that book started using it, and then it became part of the vernacular, and everyone just assumed that it was what people did. But there's an important part here, and the important part is that there are two sentences here, because everyone knows there's an elevator pitch that tells you what you do, who benefits, whatever, and it goes like this. The title is a category that helps primary audience achieve primary benefit. So you might say that Think and Grow Rich is a self-help book that helps entrepreneurs get rich. Simple as that. Just fill in the blanks. Don't overthink it. Don't say, well, I have five benefits. I know you have five benefits. I know you have five different audiences. I know everyone can benefit from your book. But for the purpose of this exercise, limit it to one audience and one benefit that they will receive. So it's what to expect when you're expecting is a pregnancy book that helps women who are pregnant learn how to deal with the expectations of pregnancy. Bingo, great. Any book can be done like this. So think about what your book is. And for other people, they would have other benefits. So if you're talking to a different group, then they may have a different benefit. That's fine. But for the purpose of simplicity, because, life should be simple, then just keep it simple for this exercise. So write your book title. It could be any title you want. And what category is it? If you went to Amazon, what category would it be? Leadership? Would it be marketing? Would it be self-help? Would it be pregnancy? Whatever. And who does it help? Entrepreneurs, C-suite executives, people who want to become C-suite executives, and how will they benefit? So simple as that. Now, that's the primary information you probably know from any good elevator pitch. I'd like to take it one step further, and this is where the brilliance of my thinking comes in, because your prospect just heard you say, my book is wonderful, it's going to help you. Or my service is wonderful and it's going to help you. And they're thinking, well, I just spoke to five other people who were here in my office before you pitching their services, and they all said, they're all wonderful and they can help me. So what's going through their mind? They're thinking, what makes you different? So here's with the second sentence that no one ever talks about for an elevator pitch or what I call the foolproof positioning statement. And it's, unlike other category of books, my book has a key differentiating feature. So unlike other writing books, How to Write Your Book in a Flash has extensive information about outlining that makes outlining fun or keeps you focused. I can't even do it. Your mind always wants to think of other benefits. Okay, this is a work in progress for me. It's a work in progress for you as well. So think about your foolproof positioning statement, especially the second statement that makes you different from everyone else. So let's talk about the 10 chapters next. This, again, is part of the brilliance in writing your book in a flash. Because if you say, I'm going to have 27 chapters. Well, it's too long. People don't want to read 27 chapters unless they're really, really short, which is, you know, if you use this as a template, I give you permission. Your book could have 15 chapters. I looked at my book. My book now has grown to 14 chapters. But if you start with 10 chapters, you have a framework. You're going to say, aha, I have my 10 chapters. I have my outline. This is great. You may decide one day later, you know, chapter 5 really should be 2 chapters. That's fine. You will go to Barnes & Noble and look through dozens of your competing books out there. They're all wonderfully written, and you'll see some have 10 chapters, some have 32 chapters, some have 16 chapters. It's okay. I just want to give you a place to start. And as I said before, and I won't repeat this in great detail, 8 chapters are exactly the same. You know, they're proving your point. The first chapter is your roadmap that gives people an idea of what they're going to learn, how they're going to benefit, and why they should trust you. The last chapter is what they've learned, what they should do next, and for a big business book, how they can work with you. What are the next steps? Is it a phone call? Is it a consultation? Is it buy my course off the shelf? Is it, buy my distance learning program? Is it bring me in to speak for your company? Any of those are perfectly fine. In a big business book, they're perfectly acceptable. People, if you've done your job right, people want to know how they can engage you, how they can work with you, how they can bring you home, how they can bring you into their business to help them get to the next level. They know, like, and trust you at this point. Don't leave them hanging by saying, goodbye. No, here's our next step. So definitely use that last chapter as a subtle sales invitation to get them to reach out to you to take the next step. So here's an example of a book. Let me grab the book here. It is called Fearless Leadership by Carrie D. Lorenz, and it's a marvelous thought leadership book by a woman who is a fighter jet pilot for the Navy. How cool is that? And she draws on her fighter jet pilot experiences to illustrate leadership points. So she has lots of case studies and examples. And I looked through her book to see which chapters she had and how she labeled them. And I'll share that with you as an idea generator for you and your books. So chapter 1 is the overview. Then she has 8 key points. Key point number 1 is courage. Key point number 2, tenacity. Key point number 3, integrity. Key point number 4, vision. Key point number 5, culture. Key point number 6, prepare. Key point number 7, perform. Key point number 8, resilience. And then there's the last chapter, which is the conclusion and the next steps. And you see in the center of this cute little diagram is leadership. They all revolve around leadership. They all prove the point that she knows a thing or two about leadership. And if you're smart, you're going to hire her and bring her into your organization to consult with you, to speak with your people, and to buy lots and lots of copies of this book for your troops, because they can all become better leaders from learning from her example. So this is how you can outline the first step in outlining your book, because you now know the 10 chapters. You know, you're way ahead of everyone else, because frankly, there are these people called pantsers. They write a book by the seat of their pants. And this is a term that I did not create. This is a term that's used for mostly fiction writers, but I'm going to apply it to nonfiction writers as well. And they're fiction writers. These are, novels and stuff. That's fiction. Nonfiction is books that have content and thought leadership and how-to and substance as opposed to a good story. Okay, so nonfiction writers, they either write from an outline because they know that, whodunit, and they build up all the backstory so you can logically figure out whodunit. Makes a lot of sense. Good. Okay, then there are people who say, I'm going to just invent these characters and see where the story takes me. And this is like the guy who starts painting the floor in his office, and he starts at the door, and by the time he's done, he's painted himself into a corner, and he has no way to get out. And a lot of these pantsers write these stories, and they say, oh, my God, how am I going to resolve this? How am I going to get the hero out of this sticky situation? And they realize they can't, because they created such an impossible situation that they're stuck in a corner. I don't want you to be stuck in the corner. I don't want you to be a pantser. I want you to be an outliner. And if you follow this idea, you will have your 10 chapters done. You'll know the 10 points you are making, and then you can go on and outline each point. So as we look at the next slide, here's what I call my 8 by 10 exercise. And this is something that I've created, yay me. This is my thought leadership. This is the value I'm bringing here. I have 8 chapters, and there are 10 proof points per chapter. And I call this icebreakers, which I want to apologize here. I did not revise my chart. Icebreakers is a cute little term I created, so you can remember that ICE stands for different parts of the 10 proof points that you can create. But in order to come up with those 10 proof points and give them the cute total of icebreakers, I had to rename these little 10 daisy points around the chapter elements in your outline here. So I apologize. This will be corrected in my actual book. So what do you start with? Many books start with an inspiring quote. Oh, I take that back. Oh, I did do this. I apologize. Okay, here's the backstory. You want to have mnemonics so people understand and can remember your key points. So that's why I created the term icebreakers. And ICE stands for another proof point in your chapters. And the I stands for an inspiring quote. And because you might have a quote from Brian Tracy or from Zig Ziglar or from Aristotle that said that puts people in the right frame of mind and also gives you more credibility. So that's cool. So that's the I. Then the C, case studies. People love case studies. Case studies say, here's a company that had this problem. They tried everything. They brought me in. I worked with them. I suggested they use this strategy. And as a result, they overcame their problem. And now they're rich and famous and everything's wonderful. That's the example of the case study story. The more case studies you put in there, the more credible you sound. You make your clients look like heroes. You look like a hero for making them heroes. Everyone works out great. And your readers say, okay, this can be done. I can use this principle. This is wonderful. I love this. If you read Good to Great by Jim Collins, you know, the very seminal work, he uses case studies all the time, and it's just wonderful because it proves his points. Okay, the E stands for an exciting signature story. So I could have said signature story, but then it wouldn't fit into icebreakers. I couldn't think of any other term that had 10 letters that made any sense at all. So I fudged a little bit by putting the E in there to make an exciting signature story. And frankly, shouldn't all signature story be exciting anyway? Okay, so a little fudge there. I give you permission to fudge on your mnemonic devices. Thank you very much. Hey, your signature story is a story that really sets you off and gets you going. Like at the beginning of our seminar today, I told you the story of how I write fast, and I gave you 2 backup ideas, you know, stories of that. You know, I worked for newspapers, and I wrote really, really fast. I went to Northwestern. They taught me to write really, really fast, and now I can help my clients write really, really fast. So that's an example of the signature story. You can read lots of books online about how to create stories or whatever, and many of them are wonderful. Doug Stevenson has written a great book on storytelling. Henry DeVries has written a wonderful book called Persuade with a Story. So they're really, really good books that go into a lot more detail on how to craft your story. The B stands for bar charts and graphs. People love statistics, especially numerical people. So some people are going to be won over by your stories. Some people are more visual, and they're going to need or numerical. They're going to want to see statistics, and they back up your stories. If you look at, say, The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, he has lots of wonderful stories. I'm not sure he has a lot of statistics that back up those stories. I'd have to reread it to double-check to make sure. The Freakonomics people have lots of statistics to back up their stories. So again, for the economics-minded person, they really want those stats and bar charts. It makes it very much more digestible for them. Then there's research, internal research. That's the material that you're doing. You're mining your own ideas. You're thinking of things. You're going through your own case studies, your stories, the research you've done, the surveys you've done, the material that you've written, your articles, your blog posts, your speeches, and such like that. The E stands for external research. This is where you're going out on the web and you're looking for new reports, new studies, new statistics, things that you frankly may not have because you may not have it all. I don't have a lot of statistics, so I go out and I will source that and I will put those sources in the book. You never want to plagiarize. No, 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 no. You always want to quote your sources, make them happy, make you happy, make the lawyers happy. Never take something and just assume it's in the public domain. Always cite your source. You can also interview people and do your original research as well. So you call professors, you call think tank leaders, you call consultants, you call other thought leaders in your area, and you get quotes from them and stories from them. anecdotes are shorter case studies. You know, here's a story I heard about whatever, and these are little anecdotes, and that's fine. The C stands for cartoons. If you look at the Dummies books, they always have cartoons. I think that's why people love the Dummies books so much. They all have cartoons. They illustrate the point. It's really fun. You can find cartoons online by just typing in Google, go to cartoons, and you'll find lots of wonderfully funny and insightful cartoon people out there who are more than willing to share their cartoons with you for a very, very small licensing fee, $5, $50, whatever. It's wonderful. They illustrate your book. They make it come alive. They make your book easier to read, frankly, because if you have books that have lots of words in it, there's something wrong with that, but it's so much easier to read a book that has visual elements like cartoons and charts and graphs and photographs and other pictures and elements. And then engaging numbers is the next. So again, statistics. And finally, we have relevant charts and graphs. These would also be process visuals, you know, like that pyramid I had at the very front of the work. You know, that's a nice way to illustrate the five different levels of books, from easy to hard, from credible to even more credible. And on the slide after that, I had that little stick figure walking up nine stairs, and that illustrates the nine steps in writing a book. So again, a nice little relevant chart there that helps to cement the ideas in your brain and make it seem doable, because frankly, some people need to put things in little buckets. And there have been studies done going back to the Dale Carnegies in the 1920s to hard back to ancient Roman times, where if you can visualize an idea, you'll remember it a lot more than if it's just a random word out of context. So definitely have to do that. Hey, you don't have to do it alone. As I've been saying throughout this, if this sounds too tough for you, you can hire a book coach like me or a ghostwriter like me or a co-author like me to get guidance and feedback and accountability. You can also use them to get contacts and referrals, and they no doubt will save you time and money. And as Ken Blanchard told me, he likes to learn from each other. You know, you can be in a vacuum when you're right by yourself. You know, that's why when I finish my book, I'm going to have several beta readers. And if any of you would like to become a beta reader for me, it's free. I don't pay you, but you get an advanced copy of my book and you get to read it and you get to tell me what you liked and what you didn't like. And I may just chop out stuff that doesn't work. And that would be great. So how do you hire a ghostwriter? Well, there are five things to look for, because, you know, personal chemistry is very important. You know, I'm not the right fit for everyone. And frankly, some clients are not the right fit for me. So it's a two-way street. If they're definitely type A personalities of people who sweat over every word, they're not going to be a good fit for me. So you have to think about that as well. Are they a good fit for you? Do you like their accent? Does it drive you crazy? It's only going to get worse over time. You're going to be spending a lot of time working with your co-author. Second, do they have time to do your job on your schedule? Good people could be very, very busy, and they may have to squeeze you in, and you know, they're happy to do the work, they'll do a good job. But if you need the book done in 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 9 weeks, can they fit that into their schedule to meet your schedule? So that's important. Do they understand your topic? This is an interesting area because, you know more about your topic than the co-writer would. Otherwise, he'd be writing the book instead of you. So it's important that they have a somewhat of an understanding about your topic. Like if someone's talking about quantum physics, I'd probably be the worst person in the world to work with you on. On the other hand, if you're writing a book about careers, you know, I could probably understand that because I know what careers are all about. But more importantly, the ghostwriter, the co-author, or the book coach should understand the process. They should have the tools and tactics and worksheets and exercises and advice that can help you along the way. So it's important that they have the background and knowledge on the writing and editing process to help you get to the next level, as opposed to understanding the intricacies of your topic in great detail. Does that make sense? You know, I hope that I explained that properly. So you're the rocket scientist, not them. They don't have to understand rocket science, but they have to be able to understand or have the tools and techniques and exercises and coaching tools that help you overcome your barriers and your limitations. And if they are going to be writing, you know, this is a book coach. If they are writing, do they have a passion for your topic? Because if you're writing about rocket fuel, it's pretty hard for me to get excited about rocket fuel, whereas many other topics I can get pretty excited about for 6 months and then move on to something else. So do they understand you? Do they get you? Do you have chemistry? Do you like the way they write? You know, they may have a style that you just love, and they may have a style that I just don't get it. I want someone who's much more academic writing, or this is much too academic for me. I want someone who's going to be more fun and breezy. So think about the style that you want to do. So here's a little pitch for me. I'll be nakedly honest about this. Should we work together? Well, I've written 6 books for John Wiley. I self-published 3 other books. I'm an award-winning daily newspaper reporter and a business newspaper editor, so I know the whole business side of the world pretty well. I have degrees in journalism from Northwestern University, and I've interviewed people like, oh, President Gerald Ford and First Lady Barbara Bush, and, you know, people like that. So I have some credibility here. Plus, I've written thousands of newspaper articles and blog posts and such like that. So I think you can agree, I know what it takes to write a book and get it done and get it done. So now this next step is for you to get it done. What action are you going to take? The next step here for everyone on the call, you're entitled to a free 20-minute coaching session. It's called What's Holding You Back? Coaching session with Dan. There's absolutely no obligation here. If it's a good fit, we'll work together. If it isn't a good fit, don't worry about it. You're going to get a lot of good information during this 20-minute call. So I suggest that you click on this link, www.prleadstoprofits.com/writing, and we could talk about anything you want. We could talk about book coaching and the whole book coaching process and the ghostwriting process. We can go back to the exercises in this session here about how to outline your book and the chapters or your title or your positioning statement. Doesn't matter to me. I'm happy to help you. My mission is to help people write great books that can change the world or help them get ahead in their businesses. I live in a world of ideas, and the more ideas I'm exposed to and the more ideas that I can help flesh out, the more rejuvenated I feel. I know that's kind of crazy. You may not have that modality. You may say, I like to help people. That's true. I do like to help people, but I get jazzed by the ideas of the thoughts. I'm a book person. I'm a word person. I get turned on by that. And if I can help you take your book to the next level with these ideas, that's great. And again, if we can work together, that's super cool. If I can just help you get over this hump, that's super cool too. So let me get to questions. Here's a question. Okay. I've gotten 60% of my first draft done, have lost energy, feel discouraged. How can I create a plan that helps me finish? It feels like a daunting task. I need to cut this down to size. I know that sounds simple, but it is not easy. Well, I hope that I've actually answered that question during this seminar, because if you write your outline, and again, if you structure your chapter, your executive summary, those 500 words, you whittle it down to the positioning statement, you're going to get a lot more focused. Then you'll have a title for your book. And then you can, like, it'll start to look like a real book at that point. You know, it's like, I have a title for my book. I know what it's about. I know who it's for. Then you do the 10 chapters, and you have those 10 ideas for each chapter. Now you're focused. And then you get super focused by going to each chapter and outlining each chapter with those 10 different icebreakers. And think about, okay, what chart can I use to illustrate this? What numbers can I use to illustrate this? Let me go online, look for a cartoon. That's always fun to illustrate this. What stories do I have? What personal stories do I have? Who would I need to talk to find more information for this? And I think if you get if you do that, you'll get back on track. Or read the DIP book, because the DIP book will also help you say, should I fish or should I cut bait? So I hope that helps. But again, we can talk more about this during your one-on-one with me. Okay, here's another question from Mark. I've written prior business books and have enough content now for 1 or 2 books, but don't have time to do the writing and editing. Conversely, I can't fund the fees for a full ghostwriting professional. Any alternate models to consider? Any networking sources to talk about with competent partial support short of full ghostwriting? Well, I think there's congratulations. I think that's great. Anyone who's written a book can write another book. But again, there's time and energy and priorities and such like that, and there are things going on with your life. There's a supposition here that ghostwriting fees are too expensive. So let's have a talk about that and see what your ideas of expensive are and what my ideas of expensive are, and you may find that we're not that far apart, which would be wonderful. Or if we are, then there are other options as well, like book coaching. to help you get over that hump, which is obviously much less expensive than ghostwriting because it takes less time. Okay, here's another question from Candy. Candy comes to all my things, so thank you so much. You're just your client number one. I really, really appreciate you. Okay, how many words recommended for nonfiction chapters? Is there a difference for ebooks versus paper books in terms of length? Great questions. Okay, generally speaking, let's say 45,000 words for a book. So if you have 10 chapters, 4,500 words per chapter, bingo, done. But of course, those are rough guidelines. So if one chapter is 5,000 words and the other chapter is 4,000 words, don't sweat it. These are not hard and fast rules. If you go to 50,000 words, no one's going to complain. If you go to 60,000 words, no one's going to complain. Over 60,000 words, I think then you're running into some issues if you're having your book professionally published, because it costs more to publish a book that has more than 60,000 words than less than 60,000 words, just more ink, more paper, whatever, more editing time. So I hope those are some good guidelines. The second part of your question, is there a difference for ebooks versus paper books in terms of length? Yes, as a matter of fact. Well, I have seen ebooks that are basically 2,000 words. They are long articles. They're basically lead gen types of books. So we're talking about a big business card. It's a lead generator. These 2,000-word books are lead gens as well, and that may be all you need. You want to have a book that establishes you as a thought leader, that establishes your know, like, and trust factor. And if you do that in 2,000 words and have a call to action at the end of your ebook that said, for a free consultation, call here and see if this is a good fit, then that's fine. So it could be as little as 2,000 words, and I've seen books that are full-length books that have just been translated into ebook format, and they have every word in the book. So it can go either way. I hope that answers your question. We can talk more about this or anything else during our one-on-one. Okay, here's the next question. Oh, I clicked on the same question. Okay, question, next question. Wow, I'm brain dead here. Okay, here's the next question. How do I decide what to put in and what to leave out? Jonathan, I did answer that during the call. If it serves your purpose and it helps the readers, leave it in. If it's extraneous fluff that really no one cares about, take it out. There's another book that I recommend called From 2K to 10K Words in a Day. And it's a nice little book about that actually supports my idea about outlining. And this fiction writer basically says, you need an outline, which is great. And she also says, when she goes back and reads through her book, if there's a chapter in there or a scene in there that just doesn't work, she takes it out. You know, she might have liked to write it, or it was hard to write, or she'd be like, how do I get this person from America to Istanbul, and I'll have this chapter in there about this thing that happens at De Gaulle Airport, and it just doesn't work, just take it out. So, again, if it helps you and it helps the reader, leave it in. If it doesn't, that might be a good litmus test for you to just take it out. Okay, we have a couple more questions here. Okay, here's a question from Stephanie. How can I learn the publishing process hurdles quickly so that I don't waste time on logistics and can spend more time on content creation? That may be where you hire a book coach and we just talk it through, because you need to know what you need to know, and you don't need to know what you don't need to know, and you can hand off what you can hand off to other people. So without knowing more about your question, it's hard to really answer it, but you can certainly go online and type in, should I self-publish or should I work with a publisher? Or what are the advantages of this? Or how much should I, you know, ask your questions into Google, and you will no doubt find someone who's written a nice authoritative article about that, and they want your business because that's what they do. So they will give you a lot of meat, and they will ask for a call to action to get you to buy from them. You don't have to buy from them. Just take the meat and digest it and go on. And after you read three or four articles on the same topic, you'll probably pretty much know all you need to know about that topic. So start there and ask me questions later, and we can take it to the next level. Okay, I think there's one more question here. How do I get through the procrastination phase? Rick asked that question. Okay, well, we addressed that with the war on art. We addressed that with the dip. We addressed that with Amy Cuddy's question about the imposter syndrome, and there may be 500 other reasons why you're stuck. So when we do our one-on-one call, we can go into that in more detail, because I'm sure everyone on the call can, if we said, let's all brainstorm and think of 500 reasons why we are putting off our book, all of us on this call could think of a collective 500 different reasons. So let's just attack the problem that you have during our one-on-one. And we'll take it from there. So those are all the questions I have received. So I thank you very much for attending this seminar. And please do schedule your free complimentary one-on-one call with me, and we'll take it to the next level. So thank you very much, and I appreciate you being here, and write your damn book already. Take care. Bye.